Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm David Marsland, and this is The Leader.
The new strain of the virus presents us with a new challenge, just as a vaccine is being rolled out. So it is right to give more support for businesses to get through until spring.
Chancellor Rishi Sunak announcing a £4.6 billion lockdown aid package for British businesses there, with the somewhat vague until spring deadline. Maybe that's because there seems to be a bit of an issue with when lockdown's actually going to finish. February, said the Prime Minister last night. March, said Michael Gove this morning. Meanwhile, schools that opened yesterday closed today, and the Evening Standard's learned that although 5 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine have been delivered to the UK, only 1 million people have had the injection. Our political reporter Sophia Slay's with me. Sophia, Boris Johnson and Michael Gove can't seem to agree when this lockdown's going to end. Is the reality actually that no one really knows?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Nobody knows. And I think we'd be a little bit silly to try and predict that. I mean, that's exactly what Michael Gove, the Cabinet Office Minister, said this morning. He said, you know, nobody can predict when this will end, basically. It was refreshing to hear him being frank, because we quite often get the sort of the sunshine speeches and, oh, everything will be better by X, Y and Z. And he said that any relaxation is going to depend on ensuring the most vulnerable are all vaccinated. And he sort of phrased it saying that, you know, as we enter March, we'll be able to lift some of these restrictions, but not necessarily all. So I think that was quite a frank, you know, summary of what we're looking at now.
But isn't there an issue, as there has been throughout this lockdown, that people have been complaining about how the government's saying one thing and then it changes its mind and then there's a U-turn? Doesn't there come a point when the public goes, can we listen to our politicians anymore?
That's a really good point. And I think we're at a real crunch moment over that currently, because particularly over schools. I mean, schools is the big issue, I think, where they could have done better. Boris Johnson was on the Andrew Marr show on Sunday morning, and I watched back the video just to double make sure that he did say it. He literally said schools are safe. And then 36 hours later, he's shutting down England's schools until at least, you know, the end of February half term. So, you know, some children in England went back for one day yesterday on Monday, only to be told that, you know, back home you go. So that's really, really tough. I really feel sorry for children and parents, but particularly children. I feel children are being messed around. I spoke to the Department for Education today, and they said essentially that they are closing schools, not because they're unsafe, but because, you know, these additional measures are needed to contain the spread of the virus. But, you know, surely that could have been better managed. These soaring virus rates, we've known they've been increasing for days, weeks even. And to have that screeching U-turn on the first day back after Christmas, it's a bit of a slap in the face, I think.
Now, schools are closed, Sophia, but nurseries, of course, are open. I suspect that's probably quite a welcome thing for a lot of parents with very young children. But how do those nursery workers themselves feel when they have to go in but school teachers don't?
Yeah, I think they're quite stressed. I mean, I did a story today saying that nursery workers are feeling terrified and abandoned, was what one operator said to me. You know, they can't quite understand why schools have been ordered to close during this fresh lockdown, but early years providers are supposed to be staying open. And they're sort of saying, well, are we vulnerable? Does the government think schools aren't safe? Are we at risk here? And, you know, they're... arguments are, why aren't we being vaccinated? We're really close to these kids. You can't socially distance from a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old. They climb all over you and everything. You can't socially distance in that way. So, you know, their concerns are really, really understandable. And Michael Gove said, actually, he was asked about why nurseries are staying open this morning, and he said, you know, it's vital for sort of, you know, the children whose parents are doctors, nurses and such like, so that they can continue their work and have childcare there. But, you know, nursery staff hit back sort of saying, well, you know, it's not just the children of critical workers who we'll be looking after, we're also looking after other children as well. So, you know, I do understand their point. Why can't they just open for critical workers as they did before?
Before Boris Johnson made his announcements, Scotland said that it was going into lockdown. Nicola Sturgeon held a press conference hours before the Prime Minister did. How do you think relations are going between Westminster and Holyrood?
Well, they're definitely diverging and doing their own thing, aren't they? I mean, the interesting thing that Nicola Sturgeon said that really struck me was that Scotland was 4 weeks behind London. You know, she's shutting down a country on the basis of it being 4 weeks behind the place where I'm currently living and sitting at the moment. And I did think, well, you know, what has England been doing for the last 4 weeks? And it's certainly coupled with the announcement a few hours later from Boris Johnson that England was following suit and going to lock down. You know, it adds to that suggestion of these kind of screeching U-turns that we keep seeing. And it does kind of feel like major decisions are being made within a matter of hours.
And there's more from Sophia and our entire political team in the newspaper and at standard.co.uk. Here come the ads. Why not take a second to subscribe to The Leader? And you'll get our news, analysis and commentary every day at 4 p.m.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
All is fair in love and war.
Bridgerton hit Netflix on Christmas Day and proved an instant hit. The streamer says the period drama was seen in 63 million households in just 4 weeks. The Evening Standard's Katie Rosinski's with me. Katie, the period drama is not dead. Why is this one hitting so well with so many people?
I think it just really arrived on Netflix at the perfect time for a show like this. I mean, it landed on Christmas Day. The sort of holiday period is always great for indulging in that kind of show anyway, but you know, after the year that everyone's had, it's escapist, it's a nice sort of getaway from all of our problems that we've got currently going on. So I think it just ticked a lot of boxes at the right time for a lot of people.
It seems to come, these things, with a touch of controversy, though. We had The Crown. You and I have spoken about The Crown. People complaining about historical accuracy in there. And people have been talking about the historical accuracy of Bridgerton, which I think sort of misses the point of what it's trying to do. But particularly with things like shock horror, diversity in casting, Katie, that seems to be a controversial issue in period dramas at the moment.
Obviously, Bridgerton is from Shonda Rhimes's production company, Shondaland, and they've always adopted a colour conscious approach to casting. They've done that in like their contemporary shows, like most famously with stuff like Grey's Anatomy and Scandal. And they've basically just taken that approach and applied it to the period piece. I spoke to Bridgerton's showrunner for a piece that I did a little while back, and he said that the show's colour conscious casting was rooted in the, there's some research and some historical schools of thought to suggest that Queen Charlotte, who was married to King George III, was potentially Britain's first mixed race royal. So basically, when he was kind of creating the world of Bridgerton, he sort of thought, what would have happened if Queen Charlotte was mixed race? How would her court have looked? And he sort of applied that approach.
In a way, programmes like Bridgerton, which are not claiming historical accuracy, are actually making people think about particularly Britain's history in a different way and realising that it wasn't perhaps as white as we've been led to believe.
Yeah, definitely. And I think absolutely a positive thing. I mean, period dramas historically have not been very diverse, and they've maybe sometimes presented quite a whitewashed version of Britain's history. So I think any moves towards better representation is definitely a good thing. And also, when you think of, you know, period dramas are a massive export for the British film and television industry. I mean, Downton Abbey is one of our biggest international success stories. But, you know, while period dramas have strong hold on the industry, it has sort of created an environment where there aren't necessarily as many good opportunities for actors of colour. And you see this kind of cycle whereby they end up maybe travelling to America to work because there's better opportunities over there. I mean, the lead actor in Bridgerton, Regé Jean Page, he has worked quite extensively in America. I had a chat with him and his co-star before Christmas, and he mentioned the sort of irony of it having to be an American production company to sort of bring him back to star in the sort of classic British period drama thing.
And Katie's written a great piece on the evolution of the period drama, which you can find at standard.co.uk. That's Alida. We're back tomorrow at 4:00.